Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Welcome to The Dignity of Women, where we dig deep into the vocation and dignity of women in the church, in modern times, and as an answer to the call for a new evangelization. I'm your host, Kimberly Cook. Joining me today live in person and from a beach house in Maryland where we have weathered a tropical storm together, I have Archduchess Kathleen and Archduke Imre von Habsburg of Austria. So thank you both so much for being with us today and joining us.
Thank you, Kimberly.
It's a pleasure.
Great pleasure.
So the first thing I want to start with is, Imre, maybe you can just explain the name and the lineage of the Habsburgs to people who might not be familiar with what that family line looks like or what that means to the people of Austria.
Yes, so basically I'm part of the Habsburg family, which is a family that has roots in Switzerland, and that came to Austria and eventually was elected. The first family member was elected emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, and who was called Rudolf. And that was in the 13th century, 1291 to be exact. And since then, with little interruption, my family was active in, let's say, European politics. And our name is Habsburg Lorraine, which dates from the wedding from Maria Theresa with Francis of Lorraine, who was a French. And her father did not have any son and thought that his daughter was very capable. So she became, you know, the head of all these different countries, and he was elected emperor of the Holy Roman Empire.
Wow.
And this continued till 1918, at the end of the First World War, when finally the family was deposed at the end of the war. The last emperor was my great-grandfather, who was called Charles, and who was also beatified in 2004.
Right, and that is huge. So we know him in America as Blessed Karl, and Kathleen, you heard of him before even meeting Imre. So what attracted you to Blessed Karl and his wife Zita?
Actually, I read an article in 2010 or 2009 about your great-grandmother, the last empress, the wife of Blessed Karl, who is now has this lovely title, Servant of God, so Servant of God Sita. And I think the name of the article, the title was the Last Catholic Empress. And I was so inspired by her example as a wife and a mother, her example of fidelity to her vocation, her example of fidelity to her role of empress and queen, and also her lifelong fidelity to Blessed Karl, even though she was widowed at the age of 29, her incredible strength of personality and character of raising her 8 children on her own from the time she was 29 until her death when she was in her 90s.
Wow.
She raised 8 children who all had she passed on the faith to them, and they all indeed kind of carried on this legacy of responsibility towards their people, even though they were deposed and very often really suffered. When the family was deposed, they were sent a little bit all over the world. They didn't have any money. They lived very poorly on the charity of others. And despite this, she was just an incredible example. So I thought, what an antidote to what our idea of feminism is, and mm-hmm. what our idea of self-actualization is, and what this kind of modern ideal of a feminist woman. And here is this person of Zita, who was the last empress of Austria-Hungary. She went from empress to poor woman, poor widow, living on the charity of others.
Wow.
And she lived this holy life, and I was just so inspired by the story. So, unbeknownst to me, and I really felt called at that point to kind of make her story known. I remember mm-hmm. talking about her to some of my friends, maybe even you, Kim, at the time, saying, oh, this is really interesting. We know we need to be talking about this woman and working towards her beatification and canonization. And a church that I very often went to in Washington, D.C., St. Mary, Mother of God, had a yearly mass in honor of Blessed Carl.
Wow.
Because it's a historically German church in Washington, and they had been doing for several years prior a mass in his honor. And so I said, oh, that is so cool. I'm going to go, and I hear that Archduke Imre will be there, and I'm going to tell him that I think his great-grandmother also deserves some attention. So I came, and I brought some close friends. We were the only young people, I think, at the mass.
And I love that. I remember that story. Yeah. I remember you thinking, okay, it's going to be neat to meet him. He'll probably be, like, you know,
yeah.
80 years old
right.
or something. And then
right.
it'll
yeah,
be great.
Like a title like that, and you assume things, I think. But
and then you were shocked, right? When you saw Imre, you were like, where's the Archduke
right.
or something?
Well,
expecting to see this man many, many years older than him.
Right. I think I did probably Google him beforehand or something. But when I first heard that you would be there, I definitely thought you would be like an older guy. And then I saw, he looks like he's our age. And then afterwards, we all kind of went up and introduced ourselves, and you had just arrived in Washington.
I had just arrived, and I was informed that there was a mass for my Greek father, and I was very surprised. I didn't know that he was known in America.
Right.
Or at least not in Washington, in this parish. And so they had a mass in his honor, and it was the 21st of October, so that's really his feast day.
Wow.
And it's an important day because John Paul II, when he beatified Blessed Carl, he chose this date because it's his wedding day.
Okay.
So it's the date where in 1911 they were both married. And so I think it was the 99th anniversary of their wedding, which was a very symbolic moment. And of course, we did not realize this at the moment, that this was the first time we would meet.
Wow, on that anniversary,
that
is amazing.
That she had a devotion to Zita, and I had always a great devotion to my Gregorian father, praying to him a lot, entrusting to him also my vocation.
Right.
And so I came to this mass with, you know, a lot of joy, and told to the people in a very simple way that I was very happy to meet so many people, and I didn't know many people. And
right.
so mm-hmm. I think many parishioners came afterwards to greet me, and among others, a group of who are now my good friends and my wife.
Now, was there anything special about that moment at the time? I mean, some people have stories where it was just a meeting and this person was nice and there was nothing. Was there anything specific when you met your wife that you felt there was something different about her than anyone?
She was definitely very charming, that I have to say. And I really wanted to accept the proposition to get a beer with all of these people.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh. We were to tell that part. We had asked him to go get a beer with us, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. I have something after this, very politely.
Okay.
And we said, mm-hmm. We've never met the descendant of a saint before.
Right.
I'm sure he does not drink. He's much too holy.
Very proper, right.
I would have loved to, but unfortunately I could not. But we kept in touch and became very good friends. And I think what really struck me, or what made us take the decision to advance together, was the faith that we shared,
uh-huh.
values, strong principles, and also I was very impressed about her fight for life. for the sanctity of life.
Yes.
Coming from Europe, this is of course a topic, but you rarely meet people who are very, very committed, or if yes, they're more politicians.
And she was very dedicated.
She was grassroots, she was
dedicated,
having a whole career in this topic that you can tell about. But it was something that really struck me, and I was very focused on the family. I thought it was very important to protect the family that is so attacked nowadays.
Right.
The first cell of a society. And so, of course, this goes together, you know, pro-family, pro-life, and I just felt like a fish in the water.
Right. And I'm wondering what it was like when you first learned, when you were a child, that you were the descendant of a saint. When did that click for you?
So I think it was done in a very natural way. For us, the dinner was always a very important moment, where my father and my mother would both talk about family history, about many different ancestors, but also looking at the future. That was always important, not to be stuck in the past,
mm-hmm.
but to understand the past in order to better understand and position ourselves for the future. And so Blessed Carl was of course a key figure, and we were all present in 2004 on the big square of St. Peter's.
Wow.
So this was a very important moment. And of course, a little bit before that, I realized that there was a process of beatification, but I have to say it came a little bit later, maybe when I was after 14 years old, when I started
mm-hmm.
reading a lot about him. I did also some papers in school about him, about his letters of negotiations with his brothers-in-laws,
mm-hmm.
you know, to achieve peace in Europe. So all this was very important to me, absolutely.
It's more highlighted and more common that you have priests and religious that are saints.
That's
and I remember,
true.
Yes, I remember one time my oldest kind of being discouraged, like, so it's not possible to be a saint and to be in a family. I think that Blessed Carl and Zita are examples, perfect, like we need those examples in modern time. And as well as Kathleen said, mm-hmm. not only were they this position of royalty, but then also Zita lived a lot of her adult life not having the title and not having the status and not even having money of her own to take care of her children and herself. And that was such a radical shift in lifestyle, and I think many people would really fall apart. She is the antithesis of that spirit
mm-hmm.
of demanding. In that way, you can see the two of them were such good companions for each other along their spiritual journeys, which unfortunately was cut so short
yeah.
by his early death.
That reminds me, one of the things that is so impressive about the two of them, they both have this incredible spirit of service to each other, to their family, and to their people. And you see this from A to Z in their lives. To inherit a crown, to be called to the throne, actually can be very often is a big cross. It's a challenge, it's a vocation.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw it as a vocation, and there are stories of Blessed Carl on his coronation day when he was crowned King of Hungary. He saw it as almost a sacrament and a sacred duty from God. And he said, okay, and he took all of the peoples of the empire and really as a father figure for them. And when he was dying, he said, you know, I've tried always to do the will of God to my utmost ability, and I think it is the will of God that I die so that my people come together again. And so he really felt like that father giving up his life for his people, for his
wow.
children. And that spirit of service was to service in general, but also this idea of their vocation and unity in their vocation together as a couple. And there's actually been recently a book written for engaged couples, kind of like a
wow.
preparation for marriage with Carl and Zita. I mean, you can look at their lives in so many, you could take away everything about their life as rulers
mm-hmm.
and just look at them as an example of holiness in the
right.
married life. And it's just absolutely incredible.
And that is very much needed
mm-hmm.
as well.
Union.
Something like that.
The
I think
bold,
it's called a
yeah.
bold union.
Okay.
They, or you could look at them as this very united couple at the head of this empire that was engaged in a losing war.
Mm-hmm.
They tried everything that they could. The reason he has this wonderful moniker of the Peace Emperor, he was the only head of state engaged in World War I that was actively working for peace and mm-hmm. who accepted the peace proposal of Benedict XV. And so for that, he always had received this title of the Peace Emperor.
Wow. That's a beautiful title.
And his
title
dedication
to
that peace cost him many friends, many allies. He was ready to give everything, his throne, his very life for peace.
And can you explain what happened, why he had to go into exile, and what did that look like from the exile to the end of his life?
When he was on the island of Madeira, they lived in a very poor, very simple way, because they left Switzerland, their first exile place on the shore of the Geneva Lake, with almost nothing to attempt a restoration in Hungary. And they were captured there after saying a mass, because the mass was always the most important moment in their everyday lives. And they were put on a boat, and later on the kids were also sent to this island of Madeira. So they were living there without money. A generous family put a house at the disposition of the family,
mm-hmm.
which was on top of a hill. And so in the summer it was beautiful, but they arrived, I think, in October or November, and the winter came, and it got very cold, very humid, and heat, and got a pneumonia, which put him in bed. But I think even more important is that he was praying every day. They had a chapel close
mm-hmm.
to this house, and he was spending a lot of time in front of the Blessed Sacrament. He had a passion for that.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he felt very clearly that God was asking him the ultimate sacrifice of his life. But he also felt that he didn't have to answer straight away, and that he was very free in his answer.
Mm-hmm.
And together with his wife Zita, they took the decision to say yes to this sacrifice, even though they had 7 kids and the 8th one was about to be born.
Wow. Oh, so he died before
the last child was born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so there's a whole spiritual dimension to his death, because it was really an offering of his life. He was only 34 when he died.
Wow.
Which is
that's an extreme
very
sacrifice.
Close to the age of Christ, an age where you want to do full of things in life. You have all your projects and dedication to these countries.
They're on this island. This house is not offering all the best climate and conditions for the family.
Absolutely.
You would think that you would want to be there for that protection. And I think we've talked about that so many times, of choosing the best decision. I would just feel that there would be this hesitation to accept the offer of Christ to suffer and sacrifice your own life in the midst of leaving your family. It would be different if they were in Austria, or if they were taken care of, surrounded by wealth and family and friends, and you knew that they had all the comforts. But the real sacrifice is that you're completely entrusting them in their poverty to say, okay, Lord, I give them to you. And I know that even though this does not look good, this looks very bleak for our family, that somehow you're going to provide for them.
Absolutely. I think there was a total trust in God. But in a very human way, he was thinking constantly of his wife and children and
mm-hmm.
how they would do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a moment that was recorded as well in a written way, where he says, promise me that when I die, you go to the king of Spain. He promised me that he would welcome you in his country. So you can tell that's exactly what you're saying.
He's thinking.
You can tell that he's thinking, like, what will happen to my family on this island?
And
he
was
knows
that true?
It was
that
true.
Was true. Okay,
it was
good.
True. They stayed maybe 1 or 2 weeks. And then left for Spain, and the King Alfonso XIII welcomed them, and they spent quite a few years in Lequeitio, which is a place in the north of Spain.
It has been talked about a lot. There are two phrases that Blessed Carl that many people have already heard. The first is on the day before their wedding, he said he turned to Zita and said, "Now we have to get each other to heaven." So this became really the program of their married life, and it's so simple but so profound
mm-hmm.
for everybody. And then as he lay dying, his final words were to his wife and to Jesus. And he said to Zita, "I will love you endlessly." And if love is an action and a choice, I think we can see through her life her widowhood, the lives of his grandchildren, and now his great-grandchildren. Like, you, we see him actively loving all of us, even today. So, yes, I think that must have been so, from his father's heart, so difficult to leave his children, his wife. But he promised from his bedside with that sentence, "I will love you endlessly," to take care of them, and he has so well. And you can see that through the 100 years since he's died.
Right, and I think that is something with the saints, that we really get this profound reality of the next life, and that you're not completely separated. There's still an interaction between the church in heaven and the church on earth and the church in purgatory. They're also connected, and that's something that's so beautiful about our Catholic faith. To see someone like Zita, who again is the opposite of what we think of as a strong woman. She would die in exile, you know, living this life of a widow for so many years, and the way that her life would go down. But if she could have seen the way that it would have ended, she still would have chose him. She still would have chose this life. And I think that's the thing about the saints.
Right. But it's also a whole life of saying yes to Jesus and the little things. And Blessed Carl, that was the motto of his life, "Your will be done, Lord." And his, I talked earlier about his last words to Zita, his last words to our Lord were, "Yes, my Jesus," in front of the Blessed Sacrament. Yeah. And I don't remember what author said that, but they're like, they said something about you're practicing, each person has one word that they're practicing for their whole lives, and they'll say that word for eternity. For Mary, that word was yes, her fiat.
Wow.
For Blessed Carl, it was also his word to our Lord, yes. And just like you think of like Maximilian Kolbe and all these great saints who are able to, in that final moment, say yes. But why? Because they had been practicing their whole life,
right,
in little things and big things, to say yes everywhere they could. And if they hadn't had that practice before of always saying yes and being faithful in small things, they don't think they would have been able to, in the final moment, to also say yes on his deathbed when he's about to leave his wife, his beloved wife, and his beloved eight children.
Right.
To be able to also give that, "Jesus, I trust in you. Yes, Lord."
And I remember when I heard a talk about him, one of the things that struck me, and I don't know why this struck me because it is such a small thing, but I think it was that he was watching fireworks with his family and he was casting his eyes down to the ground, and Zita asked him, you know, "Why aren't you enjoying this beautiful celebration? It's so beautiful." And he said something about how he was practicing self-denial, or even though it wasn't anything that you needed to cast your eyes away from, but there were just little practices of sacrifice that he could do in his life to give up enjoyment in little ways. I don't know why, out of that whole talk, and so many amazing things, and struck by many things, but one thing that God wanted me to hear specifically was that way that we can sacrifice. And I've thought about that little piece of information about Blessed Carl so many times since then, and for some reason that little piece of information is something that endears me to him. And when we think about, like, Saint Therese, you know, not taking the biggest piece of cake, it's going to be an interior denial, and it's very small, like a big piece of cake or a small piece of cake. It's just the more you practice these small things, it gets easier and easier. And like you said, until the end, God says, "Okay, you've been taking these baby steps, and now I need the ultimate sacrifice."
I think being a great saint is about doing little things in an extraordinary way. And so the story that you just told is very inspiring for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's something that's very achievable. It's hard, but it's achievable to all of us. We all need to be self-disciplined. We are all able to do little sacrifices, but it's very difficult. And Pope Benedict said that the world offers you comfort, but we were not made for comfort. We were made for greatness. And this greatness is all about this sainthood that we need to aim at.
Right.
And so all these saints, and not only the religious one, but also the lay people, are wonderful examples for us to follow in a very practical way.
Right.
So that's why I like it very much.
If he was this emperor of peace in the midst of all this war and chaos, how does the Emperor of Peace wind up in exile? I guess it's a lot like we think of how does Christ, who is the Prince of Peace, end up on the crucifix? Here he is preaching about peace. How does that kind of a person end up not wanted?
I think when you really want to follow Christ, you need to follow him until the end. And even Christ says it, you know, in the gospel, like, if you want to follow me, take your cross and follow me, basically. And you see it in different ways with different saints, but Blessed Karl was really this, when he decided one day that from now on he will try to accomplish the will of God no matter what. This means in good times and in bad times, but very often it means to take your cross and follow Christ. And so it makes sense, basically, that he died a little bit like a martyr in great sufferings, mm-hmm. because he had the grace to do it, he had the capacity to do it, and also a calling to offer his life, which is valuable like every other life.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when you're young and a young father, mm-hmm. and so on, it's maybe even more valuable because mm-hmm. you give up a big part of your potential life mm-hmm. that you can have.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a huge loads of graces mm-hmm. pouring down, not only on his family, even though I'm convinced that we all received a lot of graces, because none of us has lost the faith in the whole family,
mm-hmm.
and we're numerous.
Wow.
And that's, I trace it directly to him, because
he's taking care of
yes.
it.
Because he's definitely taking care, but also to many other families and his peoples
right.
throughout Europe. Yeah.
And then his sacrifice is worth it. You know, that's
absolutely.
One way that you're honoring his
yeah.
sacrifice by mm. staying true to the faith and
yeah.
and all
and we have
that.
A couple
yeah.
of vocations as well.
Wow.
A couple of priests, so
it's going to be a great
blessed.
Family reunion in heaven, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think it's worth saying, too, the way that the church sees success and the difference between the way the church sees success and the way the world sees success. Because in the eyes of the world, Blessed Karl was kind of a failure. He was the last emperor after a 700-year dynasty, the last of a great house, in a way. Under his watch, the Austro-Hungarian Empire dissolved into many countries, and the world, I think, wants to laugh at that.
Mm-hmm.
But the church sees things completely differently. And the church has raised him up on this as this wonderful title of blessed, so as a model for all of us of holiness and of sanctity. So as the world tries to convince us to chase after greatness in the eyes of the world, to ask his intercession to help us see with the eyes of faith and with the eyes of the church, and to chase holiness instead of kind of worldly greatness.
Right. Yeah, so many saints. I think of Joan of Arc. You know, mm-hmm. she died away from the church, at least in the eyes of the bishops that
right.
did her trial. You know, she's a witch and
mm-hmm.
she's severed from the church
yeah.
and she dies being burned to death.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
so in that local time, you think, wow, what a failure. You know,
mm-hmm.
this person was so wrong. And
mm-hmm.
but yet God, you know, redeems that and makes it right. And
right.
of course, shows us again and again what his idea of success, like you
mm-hmm.
said, is, which is holiness. But again and again, it seems like we fall for it in the world, searching for this prestige, this fame, this
mm-hmm.
money, this power, over and over again. And so the saints are just constant reminders
mm-hmm.
in every generation. So it's nice to have Blessed Karl and Zita.
Also, when you're talking about how
yeah.
Zita and her, this femininity versus feminism.
Uh-huh.
She was a very strong character. She was extremely intelligent. She had clear ideas. She had obviously a force of character that allowed her to raise 8 children as a widow in the middle.
Yes,
of
that's not a weak woman.
No. And so that's another thing that I think always drew me to her, like, just wow. I don't think I'm sure I could not have done what she has done. And
incredible internal strength.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And my last question would be, how has their influence affected your marriage? Going in, you talked about an engaged couple's book based on their faithfulness in marriage. So for you two, when you think about every day as you continue to raise your children and you continue to be spouses to one another, how has their influence and how does their influence on the day-to-day continue to focus you in marriage and towards Christ?
Well, he had 8 children, so that's already a first model.
Openness to life. You're halfway there.
We have four, halfway, and that's definitely a great example as well of somebody who's very open to life.
Right.
But then I think for me, and then you have to tell what's important for you. But this perspective he had about marriage, seeing marriage as a way for, as a vocation basically, for a real purpose, which is to be united to God one day. So it's not the finality. Marriage is not the finality, but it's a mean basically to go to this finality.
A path of sanctity.
A path of sanctity. Yeah, and I like to see our marriage as this kind of path where we need to, you know, we're all struggling in our couples, and we have good times, we have difficult times. With the children, sometimes it can be difficult. With work, I mean, life is not easy, but when the couple is strong and when we can help each other and when we can really die to ourselves and live more and more for the other, then this whole marriage gives another perspective and a wonderful perspective.
Right.
So for me, that's a great example that they show us and they show to all the couples in the world.
Right.
So many aspects of their marriage are, I think, inspiring to us. Their life of prayer together, their unity together, their unity of purpose is just so beautiful. And kind of, again, going back, as you said, with the path of sanctity, like, now we have to get each other to heaven. And yeah, that's as you like to say, the whole program.
Yeah.
So have a whole program to advance together. And
yeah.
And Kathleen, you came from America and you were not part of a royal family or anything like that. So how hard was the transition for you spiritually? You were entering not just a royal family, but a family that was descendants of saints. That's also could be intimidating as well. What was the feeling for you when you first kind of embraced that this is going towards marriage and my life is going to change in so many different ways? My children will be connected to this bloodline and these ancestors that I've admired from afar, you know, but now it's becoming so real. Obviously, Zita was watching over you from above, and she had a plan for you the whole time you were praying, you know, and asking her intercession. It's probably kind of funny to think she was laughing at where it would end up.
Yeah.
But how has the spirit of all of that been for you to embrace?
It was certainly a lot of new experiences at the beginning, going to very often to Europe. I had been to Europe before, but immersing myself in a new culture and learning new languages, but still just united by our faith and our convictions, with the realization that I would be joining a wonderful family of some beautiful individuals. We're very blessed to have a beautiful unity in my family-in-law, among brothers and sisters and in-laws and parents-in-law and cousins. Leading up to that, one of the great gifts that I had in my discernment towards marriage, despite all these kind of externals that were certainly strange for an American, was a profound sense of peace. And I always tell this to unmarried girls, like, if you are discerning marriage, either to a particular man or in general, look for that sense of peace. If you're dating someone and you don't have that sense of peace, then that's a good answer that you need to break up. If you do have that sense of peace, and that doesn't mean that you'll never have fights or that you'll never have disagreements or that it will be easy. It won't be easy. But there will be somehow a sense of peace that you're on a good path and that God is watching over you and taking care of it. And I did have that in such a profound way when I was dating you, with all these variables and wondering how we were going to make this long-distance relationship work and what my life would look like. I would be leaving my family. I would be learning new languages. How would I do that with our children? And there was just a great peace in all of that. And there still is, which I thank the good Lord.
That's a great testimony, though, peace. I mean, it sounds so simple, but it's true, because especially in the midst of all this pressure, I'm going to leave my family, I'm going to live in a different country, I'm going to learn new languages. There's so many variables on top of how many people just have anxiety because their life is going to change. They're going to be sharing it with another person, even if they're down the street or something like that, speak the same language. So the fact that on top of all of those aspects, there was peace, I think that's a real testimony to the fact that God's working. And, absolutely, you know, people can say that in every vocation. Despite how crazy this might have seemed to embrace whatever vocation he was calling you to and whatever you were giving up or embracing for the first time, new adventures, I think that that's really well said, especially to young people who are wondering, how do I know that this is right? That peace is the gateway to a loving relationship, you know? And even when we are united with Christ, we feel that peace. Mm-hmm. It's not always that we're going to have it easy or not suffer, but through it all, there's going to be peace. Well, I want to thank you both for being with us today. Our guests today have been the Archduchess Kathleen and Archduke Imre von Habsburg of Austria, descendant of Blessed Karl and Zita of Austria. And, of course, Cecilia. Thank you for being here with us,
guys. Thank you very much.